Welcome back, everybody. How's it going? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios here, 18th floor on Wacker right here. And it's WGN, and it's Nick DiGilio here till 5 a.m. And at 5 o'clock, Steve Grzanich will have the opening bell. And at 6, it's Steve Cochran with your morning drive. It's Thursday morning, Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now, Triple Play Thursday, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. And, yeah, so there you go. We'll be talking about a lot of stuff. We got a lot of food stuff that we're going to be talking about a little bit later on, and also a story about we're going to talk about like high school cliques and nerds and cool people and how that changes over the years, and we'll get into that as well. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text, Triple Play Thursday requests as well. But let's get into it. Every couple of weeks, our good friend Dan Feinberg joins us. Dan is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. And he joins us every couple of weeks to talk talk TV. Lots of TV always to talk about. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, and that's F-I-E-N, The Fine Print. So let's welcome Dan to the show once again. Hey, Dan, how are you?
I'm doing well. How about you, Nick?
Not bad. Not bad. Lots of TV to talk about, obviously.
Oof. Heaven knows.
So we're a few weeks away from the Emmys, and so the next time that you're on will be 2 weeks from this morning. And that'll be the Thursday before the Emmys. So I want to save. I know that you guys did your piece about who you think will win and who will win, on who should win.
I want to my colleague with the same last name and I, Scott Feinberg. He's spelled F-E-I-N, and I'm F-I-E-N, as you know.
Yeah.
Yes, we went back and forth on. He's basically our awards guy, so he did predictions on who's going to win, and I did my own personal preferences, and sometimes they lined up.
Okay, well, we're gonna talk about that the next time you're on with us, but I just want to make sure people can read They can read that at The Hollywood Reporter online if they want to check it out, or just you can check it out on The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. It's already been published, but we'll talk about that one as we get closer to the Emmys. So, all right, I'm very curious about, the commercials are all over the place. They've been taking a lot of, Amazon has been taking out a lot of ads for it, and it's the latest incarnation of Jack Ryan. Now, we've seen Jack Ryan played by Harrison Ford, Alec Baldwin, and Ben Affleck, if people can remember that movie. I can't even remember the name of that movie. What was the name of that movie?
Do you remember that one was Sum of All Fears, but I'm feeling very, very sad that you've forgotten about Chris Pine and Jack Ryan : Shadow Recruit.
Oh, I did forget about that. Wow, how could I forget about that?
I swear it happened, Nick. I promise.
No, I know. Now you've refreshed my memory. But yeah, so now there's another Jack Ryan, and it's John Krasinski, of all people. Tell me about what you think of the show.
It's sort of funny that John Krasinski was always slightly odd casting for this role, but it seems less odd after A Quiet Place. Like, he kind of gave himself a personal makeover in the best way imaginable. I mean, he directed and starred in a blockbuster movie, which allowed people to go, oh, right, he's not just the smirking guy from The Office.
That's right, yeah.
So, yeah, now he's Jack Ryan, and as you say, Jack Ryan is the Tom Clancy character, and he's been played at various different kind of back-and-forth stages by Alec Baldwin, Harrison Ford, Ben Affleck, and Chris Pine. And this is taking him back to his origins, which was kind of what the Chris Pine movie did as well, except no one saw it, so that hardly matters. And the deal is that we meet Jack Ryan as a young CIA analyst, and he's basically doing, not really scut work, but he's analyzing data, and he's checking, and he's following the money, and in the process of following the money, he finds a person who he thinks is going to potentially be the next Osama bin Laden. He tries running it up the ladder, and people don't take him seriously until they start to. And it turns out, as we learn very, very quickly, that not only is Jack Ryan an analyst, but he also was formerly in the military. He can handle himself reasonably well in physical confrontation. And next thing you know, he's globetrotting the world along with his boss, who's played here by Wendell Pierce from The Wire and Tremé. And yeah, it's another action, intelligence, espionage style show, to some degree, ripping off headlines of things happening in the Middle East and things happening in the rest of the world, to some degree, kind of aping what Homeland and 24 and about a dozen other shows have done comparably. This one is created or brought to TV by Carlton Cuse from Lost and Graham Rowland, who also worked on Lost. And what I'm basically saying about this one is that it's above average, and that sounds damning when you put it that way. I don't think it's going to blow anyone away, and that's somewhat a pun given that things blow up in the show. But there are so many versions of this show that are so kind of generic and not all that engaging. So, I'd point to something like the basically generic Mark Strong espionage show that premiered a couple months ago. I've already forgotten its name on Epix. It was basically the average version of this show. Well, this one, the production values are absolutely higher. Amazon has spared very little expense on this. They're, you know, they're all going all around the globe. Ooh, look, they're in Paris. Ooh, look, they're somewhere in the Middle East, etc. So that's a plus. Wendell Pierce is really great in this. He's having a lot of fun getting to be both sort of tough talking, but also in the right circumstances, pulling out a machine gun and returning fire. That's entertaining to see. And John Krasinski's just fine. He's good and likable, and Jack Ryan is a very, very solid and serviceable character. So I don't think this is a show that's going to change the genre in any particular way. It's not Homeland at its best, but Homeland hasn't been Homeland at its best for years. It's reasonably entertaining, and sometimes it's a little bit more than that.
Okay. All right. That sounds cool. And, you know, you talk about the production values on it. I mean, you could tell that from the trailers. Just looking at the trailers for it, it seems like Amazon spent a lot of money on this.
They definitely spent a pretty fair amount of money, and Amazon needs to do that. They're not really keeping up with Netflix because no one can really keep up with Netflix, but they need basically the shows that they put the money into to actually hit. And so something like Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, which also a fairly expensive show, it hit, so that's of some value. This is such a big brand that they're working with, and so the upside in terms of what it could mean, both as a successful franchise for Amazon, but also in terms of Amazon's general kind of across-the-board product integration positioning thing, it feeds into all of the movies we've mentioned, all of the Tom Clancy books. It feels like the kind of thing that could be a franchise for them. It was already renewed for two seasons up front, or ordered for two seasons up front, so they're already in production on the second season. And I see no reason why this shouldn't be a success. I think probably it's going to feed right into the same audience that enjoys Bosch on Amazon, which is another above-average procedural genre show that also feeds into a literary franchise and kind of circulates everything within the Amazon business empire. And I think this should function in a somewhat similar way.
It's interesting how you talk about how Krasinski sort of gave himself a makeover after Quiet Place, but he was in that Benghazi movie, which was him, toting a gun and blowing stuff up. And so, I mean, he has kind of, done this kind of thing before.
No, he absolutely has. And I am treating that Benghazi movie, which was also, I believe, directed by Michael Bay, in roughly the same way that you're treating the Chris Pine, Jack Ryan movie. I'm aware it existed. When you tell me it existed, I go, oh, right, sure, I remember that, but if you were to put me in a locked room and ask me to say anything about the movie, I couldn't, and I'm pretty sure I actually watched it on an airplane at some point.
Yeah, so. No, I mean, I couldn't tell you any. I've seen it, and I can't tell you anything more than the fact that Krasinski had a beard and he had a machine gun. That's pretty much the only thing that I remember about it.
And if I remember correctly, he was reasonably convincing.
Yeah.
In that as well. The guy has put in the gym time, and so we should all applaud his personal trainer and probably Emily Blunt for inspiring it. So,
yeah. Well, it's funny. It's
so John Krasinski.
I love that you use the word gym as in GYM, but you could have also said J-I-M. And that would have been appropriate as well.
Oh boy, I am both very glad that that was not what I was doing, but kind of wish that it had been what I was doing.
Speaking of Amazon, I've been watching Castle Rock, and I'm really enjoying
it. That's Hulu.
That's Hulu. I'm getting them all screwed up now. Okay, speaking of Hulu, anyway, I'm watching Castle Rock. And I'm really enjoying it, and I think it's great. What a great cast! I mean, and I'm enjoying it. And if you're a Stephen King fan, there's all these little nuggets in there, and I'm really enjoying it. I'm especially enjoying Jane Levy. I happen to be a massive fan of hers, and I think she's really terrific in it as well. And have you seen?
I wish there was more of her. There hasn't been nearly enough of her. Though the best episode was last week's episode, the Sissy Spacek heavy episode.
Yes.
I thought that was the best episode they've done by leaps and bounds. It was the first time that I actually saw an episode of Castle Rock and said, oh, okay, I can see the ambitions of this as more than just a Stephen King Easter egg delivery vehicle.
Right.
So
right.
I thought that was a really good episode.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it. I really am. And it's great to see Sissy Spacek anytime. She's the best. So anyway, that's on Hulu. I'm sorry. I got my streaming. I got my streaming all mixed up. So anyway. All right, let's Dan, hang on a second, okay?
For sure.
There you go. Oh, by the way, when does start streaming?
Premieres on Friday.
Oh, premieres tomorrow then. Okay, cool. So Jack Ryan will be available on Amazon tomorrow. Okay, cool. Hang on, okay?
Sure.
There you go. Dan Feinberg is with us. He is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, joins us every couple of weeks to talk TV. Follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. Lots more TV to talk about after we take a break for the news right here on WGN. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios here in downtown Chicago, here till 5 a.m. I'm your overnight dude, 1 to 5 a.m. every weekday morning. We're going to be talking about what you were like in high school and how cool kids don't always stay cool. That'll be coming up. And we got a lot of food to talk to food topics to jump on, too, some fun stuff. So stick around for all of that. Talk and text at 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. That's also the phone number to call for your Triple Play Thursday request. One artist, three songs. Get them in now. We'll play them later. Right now, though, Dan Feinberg is with us. Joins us every 2 weeks to talk TV. He's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, and you can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we always have a lot of TV to talk about, and let's welcome Dan back. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you, Nick.
All right. Tell me about the Innocents. This is a Netflix new drama.
Boy, it is hard to tell people about The Innocents because it is an odd little show. It is a British drama, and the biggest star in it by a pretty fair amount is Guy Pearce. And so got everyone hooked there. And basically the plot is that it's about a young woman named June who has been kept under wraps by her seemingly overprotective father as she's nearing her 16th birthday, and her father is about to take her off to the remote corners of Scotland to protect her, but instead June runs off with her teenage boyfriend, and they run off to London, and in the process, somehow, they interact with two strangers, and June body shifts and becomes a burly Norwegian man.
What?
Do I have you intrigued or confused?
I'm both.
Excellent. Then I have kind of to some degree done my job. It is basically, it's a show about a young woman who has shape-shifting capabilities that she does not know she possesses. And the first 8 episodes of the show, which premiered on Netflix last week, mm-hmm. are basically her finding out what she can do and finding out the origins of this blessing/curse that she has. And she doesn't only turn into bearded Norwegian men. That just happens to be what happens early on in the first triggering incident that shows that she can do this. But explaining what the rest of the plot is very difficult. There's a lot of kind of running away because Guy Pearce plays a doctor who's investigating other women with similar capabilities, including this young woman's mother. And the thing I find most interesting about the first season, which I watched all of, is how slow and deliberate it is in giving answers. And this is it's a young adult romance that with supernatural elements. Mm-hmm. So it could be Twilight, it could be any number of other very, very popular genre shows that people have seen dozens of. But the tendency in these shows is to explain everything very much up front so that you know exactly what the star-crossed lovers are working against. And in this case, it's a very slow burn. It's a very strange burn. Over the course of 8 episodes, probably what happens could be relayed in 2 episodes if someone just wanted to be straightforward and direct about it. But the series' creators, who have never done this before, Hania Elkington and Simon Durick, they aren't playing by traditional rules, and it's an interesting approach that is simultaneously very intriguing and occasionally frustrating, and it's an odd and interesting show, and the thing I like about it is that I feel like it could teach young viewers to enjoy more mature and confusing dramas, like, for example, Sense8 on Netflix, which feels like kind of the very much grown-up older sibling to this show. This show is nowhere near as mature, nowhere near as smart, nowhere near as invested in the subtext of this shape-shifting metaphor. But I can imagine how a 12 or 13 or 14-year-old would watch this and then 2 or 3 years later would see something like Sense8 and go, okay, I'm almost kind of prepared for this. Mm. And I find that interesting.
Okay. And the season one is already, it's streaming now on Netflix.
It is indeed, and it goes to a place where Netflix is pretty much going to have to renew this, or else people are going to be annoyed, because this is very much a first chapter of a more complicated and interesting story that they really don't get to the meat of after the first season. So I'm curious to see where the story goes from here, because it really hasn't gone very far, but at least now I know there are elements that interest me and that I might want to follow up with.
Okay.
It's renewed.
That's The Innocents on Netflix. All right, cool. Now, have you seen the new Jim Carrey Showtime show?
I've seen one episode of it. My colleague Tim Goodman is reviewing it. I don't want to necessarily compare it to Baskets, because I don't think it's the same show, but I think that when we talk about how Baskets is a niche show that we happen to love, I think that Kidding is going to be, for a lot of people, comparable. It is also, sticking with sort of the oddity, It's a weird little show, because Jim Carrey is playing, he's not really playing Mr. Rogers, but to a large degree he's playing a version or a takeoff on Mr. Rogers, this beloved children's entertainer who generations have grown up with, and now he's grieving the loss of his son, and he's beginning to fall apart, and it's not hugely funny, but it has funny elements to it, and it's just off-putting in ways that are interesting and intriguing, and Jim Carrey is, as he often is in these cases, entirely committed, perhaps to a distracting degree, but I think it's an interesting show, and I look forward to watching more of it when I have time. It's directed largely by Michel Gondry, and it feels like something from his brain to some degree, though it was created by a sitcom writer, and so there are elements of that. There are a lot of elements that are perhaps a little discordant in it, and despite the presence of Jim Carrey, who was once the biggest movie star in the world, this is not going to be a mainstream, big audience hit for for Showtime, and I think Showtime knows that, but it could be a show that has a very, very, very passionate but possibly small audience.
Yeah, and that debuts a week from Sunday.
Yes, and it has a really good cast. It has Catherine Keener, Frank Langella, Judy Greer. So it's full of people who are interesting to watch, and they're all doing interesting things. And I'll be interested to see how this one evolves and progresses as well.
Yeah, I've been intrigued by the commercials for it, and the trailers and things like that. And I'm definitely putting it on my DVR. And I mean, because the last time that Jim Carrey and Michelle Gondry worked together, they made a great movie. So, as soon as I heard that they were re-teaming, I was like, okay, I was very intrigued by that. So.
Yeah, it is. It's not Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, but I think there will be overlap between the people who were suckers for that movie. I mean that in a positive way, dumb people love that movie because it's a smart movie. But I think there will be some overlap of people for whom the ideas here are kind of kibble.
Okay. All right. Great. All right. That's Kidding, and that is on Showtime. It debuts a week from Sunday. Some of the shows that I've been seeing commercials for. Have you seen the? Because I watch Big Brother, I know all. Like I said, I know all of the CBS shows that are coming up. What do you make of Magnum PI? That's the commercials for it. They destroy six cars in the commercials. Stuff blows up. Helicopters are flying all over the place. Is the production values high on this show?
Relatively speaking, and I think that probably people who are fans of CBS procedurals are going to have a pretty clear sense of what the production values are, because they've had a run of somewhat similar shows where the pilots have been incredibly expensive, and so something like Hawaii 5-0 or something, that is a show with very, very high production values that were at their highest during the pilot, but has, to some degree maintained, because at this point, Hawaii has this great film television infrastructure set up, and you can really get great production values, even for a show as truly horrible as Marvel's Inhumans from last year, the ABC show that lasted a season and was generally utterly reviled. It was a totally pretty show to watch. They shot in a lot of the lost locations, and you went, ooh, pretty. And so, Magnum PI, the pilot, was directed by Justin Lin, who does good pilots. He made the pilot for Scorpion look really good, and subsequently, after he left, was one of the cheapest looking shows on television. Mm-hmm. That was a remarkable show that I watched nearly every episode of. I've got a handful still on my DVR because I just can't bring myself to say goodbye or something. But the pilot of that show was this high production value, big stunts, big action thing. And then subsequent episodes, the special effects were hilarious. And so, yeah, Justin Lin brings production values. We can do a full review of this one as we get a little bit closer to September 24th.
Right.
But it's going to be a CBS style procedural. I think that's the simplest way to put it.
Okay.
And I think probably some purists of the Magnum franchise are going to be frustrated, and those people will be a little silly, but yeah. Stand by your Tom Selleck.
There you go. Okay. All right. You talked with Cameron Britton from Mindhunter. Tell me a little bit about that and what you talked about there.
I did. Basically, we do a lot of Emmy coverage at The Hollywood Reporter, and there are lots of interviews that have to be done. And I basically did a few interviews with people I wanted to talk to. I talked to your Saturday Night Live favorite, Leslie Jones. We had a good chat. I talked to Pamela Adlon, and I talked with Cameron Britton, who plays Ed Kemper on Mindhunter. And he's just a smart and thoughtful guy who appreciates the fact that he went from being a sort of an anonymous gigantic character actor who would go in and audition for the way I put it to him was that he probably auditioned for a lot of bouncer roles. He agreed that he does, or that he did, and also a lot of construction workers too. And he said that he never got those parts. But he said he never got any part that basically relied on him being threatening, physical, or intimidating. And this part somehow made him very, very physical and very, very threatening and very, very intimidating. We talked about all of the reports of the sheer number of takes that David Fincher does in scenes, and he talked about doing dozens and dozens of takes of scenes. We talked about the amount of video of the real Ed Kemper that's actually out there, and how that can be both a blessing and a curse if you want to make a character your own. But right. He seems like a very interesting and down-to-earth guy, and I don't know where people are going to find ways to use him properly now. And so we've seen in Mindhunter how good he can be when given the opportunity. I just don't know what anyone is going to find for him subsequently that's going to be as good. Right. So
okay,
I hope people figure things out.
Okay, cool. Dan, hang on, okay?
Sure.
Dan Feinberg is with us, and he is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. We talk TV every couple of weeks. Follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print. That's F-I-E-N. We'll take a break, talk more TV right after this on WEGN. And welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. How's it going? We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios here. We are talking currently with Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print. That's F-I-E-N. Lots of TV to talk about. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right. You mentioned before the break that you talked with Pamela Adlon, and there's no way I'm not going to follow up on that. tell me about the conversation you had with her.
Yeah, I'm not even sure if the full version of this one is actually run on THR, which is a little confusing to me. But we talked about a lot of the finer moments of the show's fantastic second season. She made it clear that she did not want to talk about the Louis C.K. of it all, and that was fine. I asked, and then we moved on, as it were. But we talked about a lot of basically the season's best scenes, like, for example, the season-ending graduation dance, and she talked about how they had basically started preparing for that scene at the beginning of the season, and they were rehearsing and choreographing and all of that all through the season, and they made it so that the actress playing her oldest daughter had no idea of what the actual scene was going to be. They did not rehearse it around her. They did not tell her what the sequence was going to be.
Wow.
And then that way they got reactions sort of unfiltered. So I thought that was an interesting twist. We talked about the now famous no scene where she rebuffs a potential romantic fling by saying no literally dozens upon dozens of times, and she explains the origin of that scene, where it turns out, and this probably shouldn't be surprising, but it's funny to hear someone talk about it. Basically what they did was they did a lot of different coverage of her saying no in that scene, and then the editor said, let's just glue it all together. And so basically it could have been seven times saying no, but from seven different angles, and as a result, and seven different reads, of course.
Yeah.
You throw it all together, it suddenly becomes 49 no's, and it's a much, much more funny scene.
Yeah.
Which I think is fantastic. She talked about how they actually had a writer's room for the third season, which is coming up whenever it airs. They have yet to announce a date for it. They had just begun production when I talked, and
okay,
she's going to be directing every episode, but she said that they had a writer's room for the first time to handle scripts, and so we'll see how that goes. She sounded excited about the process and how it was going to change this season, but yeah, she said there was never any consideration in not directing every episode again. Can't wait to see how that goes.
It's interesting that, I mean, so they had a writer's room to basically replace Louis C.K. It sounds like, yeah,
pretty much. That's, you know, no one's going to come out and express it in exactly that way, though that would be the exact way in which it would be expressed, is that basically she and Louis wrote every episode either together or in some permutation, and that was clearly not something that was going to be possible this time. And so they initially set up a writer's room, and FX brought her a number of female writers. And after working with them for some time, she went and emphasized to them that her regular writing partner for over a decade had been a man. Again, she just referred to him as a man. She didn't say Louis.
Right, right.
But yeah, and so she made it clear that she needed both sides in order to make the conversations work. And so they brought in several men as well. And so we'll see how, if it feels any different, if it feels as if the voice has been thinned out in some way. I would not expect that that will be a problem, but I look forward to seeing how it goes.
I do too, and I'm really, really glad that the show is continuing. I you know, obviously when the Louis CK stuff broke, I was like, oh man, now we're going to probably lose better things, and I'm glad to see that the show has another life. All right, Dan, hang on, okay?
Of course.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us. We're going to take a break for the news, and we'll come back and talk more TV. You can read him in The Hollywood Reporter, and you can check him out on Twitter and Facebook by following The Fine Print. That's F-I-E-N. News is up next, and then more TV talk with Dan after this. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. Here till 5 a.m., Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6 has your morning drive. Triple Play Thursday. We'll get to that in a little bit. You pick it. It's one artist, three songs. One artist, three songs. Get them in now. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We are going to talk about what you guys were like in high school, what we were all like in high school. There's a new story about how nerds can rejoice because the cool kids don't usually stay very cool. We'll get to that. We have a lot of fun food topics to jump into as well, which is always a lot of fun. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show and on Facebook. Best way to stay connected is facebook.com/Nick D Show. It's our biweekly visit with Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. Always have a great time talking TV with Dan. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we bring Dan back for more TV talk. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you, Nick.
All right. So have you seen any of the new season of The Deuce?
I have not yet watched any of it because another show that Tim Goodman will be reviewing, but I believe I'm going to try getting to it this weekend just because I want to watch new episodes of The Deuce.
Yeah.
So it is on my plate, but my weekend plate also includes new episodes of BoJack Horseman and Big Mouth. So there's just a lot of TV lined up and a lot of shows that I love that are coming back, which is a good thing because a lot of the network shows aren't really going to be shows I love.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, I'm obviously very excited about The Deuce. I'm really, really excited about it. And I can't wait till it starts. Now that starts the same night as Kidding, if I'm not mistaken.
Seems possible. So I think our next visit, we should definitely be able to talk a little bit about The Deuce. Yes, September 9th for that one as well.
So that's the same night as Kidding. Are they going to be on at the same time, correct? I would imagine.
Well, no, just that's why God gave us DVR.
That's exactly right. Exactly right. All right. Well, so we'll talk about that on your next visit. When we'll talk about The Deuce. All right. Season 2 of Mr. Mercedes has begun, and tell people who might not know about that, tell us about Mr. Mercedes.
Yeah, I think Mr. Mercedes is one of those shows that's probably to some degree a victim of peak TV and the sheer number of people doing TV at this point. So it's on Audience Network, and after all of these years, people still don't yet know what Audience Network is. And for people who don't know, Audience Network is formerly the 101 Network and formerly DirecTV's Audience Network. It's basically the originals channel that DirecTV subscribers get, but you can also get it online over the top, as we say, if you want to subscribe to it. And Mr. Mercedes is, it's a Stephen King adaptation. It's an adaptation of the Bill Hodges mystery trilogy. And the first season was just a really good, solid cat-and-mouse thriller between a retired cop, played by the great Brendan Gleeson, and a budding psychopath, played by Harry Treadaway. And the show, for the second season, skipped over the second book in the series because it didn't feature the Harry Treadaway character, and it moved on to the third book in the series, which begins to introduce supernatural elements to what was formerly a very, very grounded detective slash killer show. But the show works because Brendan Gleeson is great, because Harry Treadaway is great, and also Justine Loop, who some people will maybe recognize, but only a little, because she kind of she changes her appearance, but some people will recognize her as Willa from Succession, Willa being the prostitute, playwright, girlfriend of Alan Ruck's character. And she's got a very good, very interesting character in Mr. Mercedes, where she's somewhere on the autistic spectrum, but the show doesn't exactly define if she has Asperger's or if, you know, where exactly she is on the spectrum. And so by not defining it, it lets her create just an interesting character who is funny and very sympathetic and very believably quirky. And I think she's really good. It's really three great performances, some very good thriller elements. But if you don't have access to Audience Network, it's one of those things that just kind of slips through. And there are so many channels and streaming services these days that I always feel a little guilty recommending any quote unquote new one to people, because, you know, there are 50 shows on Amazon and 50 shows on Hulu and 50,000 shows on Netflix, and Audience Network has a few. You know, some people would probably like Louder Milk, which stars Ron Livingston, but I can't tell you that Audience Network has five great shows and you want to check it out. It's just, if you happen to have DirecTV, Mr. Mercedes is a solid show, and it's got some very good acting, and it's sometimes intense, it's sometimes mysterious. There are many, many shows on TV better, but it does what it does well.
Okay. All right, so that's Mr. Mercedes. Season 2 begins in the Audience Network, and there you go. I mean, I don't have access to it, so unless I subscribe, but I am always curious about anything that Brendan Gleeson does, because he's one of my favorite actors on Earth. So
he's so good, and the best thing about the show is that 95% of comparable shows would have made his character American and forced Brendan Gleeson to do an American accent, and instead they simply excused in a line of dialogue early in the first season that his character just happened to come over from Ireland, and that's all there is to it. He's just Irish, and he drinks a lot and he swears a lot, and if you're going to have a character where Brendan Gleeson drinks a lot and swears a lot, right, and does it in an Irish accent, that will always be satisfying.
Absolutely, no question about it. I could watch In Bruges daily if I could. I just adore that movie so much. And him and Colin Farrell are so great in that movie. It's just amazing. Okay, I have not watched it yet, and I do have Stars, but we are very excited about America to Me. We're very proud in this city of Steve James, who is, I mean, one of the greatest documentarians that's ever lived, and I can't wait to watch. I've not watched it, but I mean, I hear nothing but amazing things about America to Me.
It's really good. It is the thing that people should be watching on TV at this exact moment. I mean, I'm assuming that people are already watching Better Call Saul, and they're already watching a bunch of other very good TV shows, but America to Me is the show that I'm telling people that they, if they need to seek it out, they should seek it out. And it's a good illustration of just how many really kind of solid shows Starz has at this point, and it's a little bit under the radar because Starz has their few big shows and everyone goes, ooh, Outlander and whatever, but they've got a reasonably good documentary department. They They did really good work with the first season of Vita, and this one is another winner. I saw it at Sundance back in January, and I've seen the first five episodes. It's set, as your listeners will know, in a Chicago public school in Oak Park, and it basically follows a selection of students around the school for a year, and it deals with the racial disparities in the community, the economic disparities, who's being taught, who's being served well. It's such a provocative show, but also the kids who the show is following, they're lovable, they're hilarious, they're almost all completely and instantly empathetic, and every moment of it takes you back to your own high school years, and whether your high school was literally exactly like this, as some of your listeners might feel, or just somewhat similar, it really gets to a lot of things, and it's a show that can be appreciated on any number of levels. To some degree, there are parts of it where it's just kind of a high school reality soap opera type show. Characters have crushes on other characters. Characters are going through difficulties in their love lives. You can watch it on that level if you want to. It's also a show that will get people genuinely angry, frustrated, invested in what public education in America in 2018 is, and that's just extraordinarily valuable.
Yeah, I can't wait to watch it. And that's on Stars America to me. And you can get Stars. You should get Stars. The reason I began subscribing to Stars was because of Ash versus Evil Dead. And now Ash versus Evil Dead is done, but I'm still a subscriber of Stars. So there you go. Now you go from a like a real high school documentary. Have you seen to a fake one? Have you seen the second season of American Vandal?
I have indeed seen the entire 8-episode second season of American Vandal.
I loved the first season. Love the first season. So I'm really looking forward to this one. I saw the trailer for it, and then they're going down a different road this time.
There are similarities to the road they're going down. Basically, the hook of the show is that Sam and Peter, the two high school filmmakers within the show who made the documentary American Vandal,
right.
Basically, their documentary was picked up by Netflix, and as a result, they suddenly got all of these solicitations saying, come make your follow-up documentary about us, and they filtered through all of, get countless pitches about other places. They end up at a Catholic school in Washington, where something very, very bad happened involving the spiking of lemonade in the lunchroom and a school-wide case of explosive diarrhea, all perpetrated by an unknown figure known as the Turd Burglar.
Right.
So you can get from there that there are some similarities, to
right.
be sure.
Right.
Drunks is, taking advantage of alliteration. Turd Burglar is a little bit more assonance. So,
yeah.
Everyone can work on that. But the bottom line on this is I found the second season significantly less funny than the first season. But I also found it much more ambitious and much more involving as a mystery.
Mm.
And so I think that there were trade-offs that were made in developing the second season mystery and developing what the creators of the show, Dan Peralt and Tony Yacenda, wanted to go for in the second season.
Mm.
And I think they're going for something bigger here. And it really does mostly work. Just it's not as nonstop, audaciously giggly and hilarious as the first season sometimes was.
Right.
I would say probably the last two or three episodes, I wasn't laughing much at all because the show was trying to bring around a resolution to a mystery that I was actually curious in about at that point. And I would say more so than the first season, when I really was invested in the mystery still. The reason why the show works as well as it did in the first season is because it does function as a mystery.
Right.
And I think the second season might function even more as a mystery. It's still obviously a comedy. It still takes off on true crime documentaries. There's a lot of The Keepers for Netflix true crime fans. Elements of that worked in. But I think the second season is good. I miss some of the laughter and some of the more audacious genre takeoff moments. But I'm okay with storytellers feeling as if they want to do something a little bit bigger in scope and a little bit more tonally adventurous, and I think that's what they're doing here.
Okay, all right, cool. I'm looking forward to it. Before we get out of here, are you all caught up on Big Brother?
I am all caught up on Big Brother, and my God, Fezzi is a dumb block of wood. I mean,
he is
remarkable.
He's maybe the dumbest player that's ever played Big Brother, ever. I mean, and it was funny because on last night's episode, you know, Haley basically says we are the worst players in the history of Big Brother,
The fact that she has to get roped into that,
I know.
On the other hand, he has made her look. People actually refer to her as the brains of her alliance, and I'm not sure she's all that smart.
No, she's not. He'll be gone, you know, on tonight's episode. They'll get rid of him, unless he does the battle back thing, which I've never been fond of. He's just the dumbest. And, I mean, for those two HOHs that they did back-to-back were hilarious. They were absolutely hilarious. Because, as we talked about the last time, I'm a level 6 guy. And so, like, to watch those two HOHs in a row just completely misfire, I was giddy. It was giddy.
And on last night's show, when Fezzi and Haley went over all of the things that they screwed up in those two HOHs.
Right.
I appreciated that they were at least able in that moment to step back and go, my God, how did we do absolutely everything wrong? But they absolutely did.
Yeah.
I think I'm becoming increasingly okay with the game that Tyler is playing and his amusement at what he's getting away with.
Yeah, no, I'm totally in Tyler's camp. He's the guy I'm rooting for to go all the way. So I think it's been kind of a fun season, especially with we have a couple of knuckleheads like that in there. Dan, always a pleasure, and we will talk to you in a couple of weeks. We've got next time you're here. We'll be really close to a lot of the premieres and can talk about the Deuce and we can talk about the other stuff and more. And of course, your predictions for the Emmys and what you want to win. That's all coming up the next time you visit with us, okay?
Looking forward to it, Nick.
Okay, Dan, thanks, man. Dan Feinberg, everybody, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. Follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, and he'll join us in a couple of weeks to talk more TV and preview the Emmys as well. So we're going to take a break here.